Welcome, yo! Oh, I am not Tailgate Mayor. I am the Professor Brandon Crowd, and I am joined alongside pregame engineer Andrew Sherwin. What up, dude?
Oh, man, I've been excited for this for 2 days. I've been nervous for it, too, as you might can tell. So I'm going to go ahead and fulfill Rusty's normal role, the tailgate mayor's normal role of reading off.
How'd I do with his intro? Did I do all right there?
Oh, yeah, you did fine. No, it was good. It was good. Hold on a second. I should probably click record, too, to see what happens if I do that.
All right. That'll work.
I don't know if it'll even matter. Never mind. I don't appear to have it.
All right.
It's all on you, Brandon.
I got it.
I'm going to read the normal Patreon. Our $5 followers, who we are very appreciative of. So let me just start. I'm not going to try
one
to read
breath.
Nearly.
One breath, go.
Yeah, one breath, right? So here it goes. I don't think I'll be able to do it in one breath. Laura Henshaw, Aaron Bearden, Robert Kepinler, Colby McLam, Eric Kepner, Ryan Kiefer, Patrick Cleary, Jeff Brown. Thank you again, Patreon sponsors. Jeff Brown, Brandon Crowd, Kathleen McDonald, Stacey Wright, Brandon Carl, Billy Workman, Rika Porter, Jumpy Bob, Les Miller, Tommy Witt, Mark Wiley, Julie Bosley, John Pearson, Eric Greer III, Younger Motorsports, Jason Rudd, yes, that Rudd, David Mullins, Joe Nolf, Patrick Johnson, Gail Delaney, and Brett Morris.
Woo! I think Rusty would have given you about a D minus on that one.
I don't know. I'm sure I would have got a. Yeah, I mean, it would be way down. It would be in like an M or an O minus probably. You know, last one on the list, Brett is going to host me for the Indy 500.
Super yeah. excited.
But we're even more excited for our guest tonight, Trevor.
How are y'all doing tonight?
What's up, man?
Man, we're doing great.
Yeah, I'm
glad
really
to have you.
I'm really excited about this. I've been looking forward to I've been looking forward to this for about, I think, 2 weeks when we started talking about doing this. So this is really exciting for me.
Yeah. The winter has been awful to all of us on health, so no worries on having to cough a little bit if you need to. That's sort of part of the game. The other part of the intro that we do, and Trevor, you being a young gun, we'll have to exclude you from this. Well, not really. You can tell us what you're drinking. What are you drinking?
I just got a bottle of Gatorade. I came back from lacrosse practice about half an hour ago, so I need to stay hydrated for tomorrow.
Awesome.
Nice.
Brandon, what you got going on over there?
Oh, you know it. I've got the Tito's sugar-free Red Bull. Rocking it out still in the Christmas vacation Chevy Chase glass here that only you guys can see because we're going to break the fourth wall for a minute here. But, yeah, so you know that.
Yep, the fourth wall happens. And I've got a Jim Beam White Label and ginger beer. Very tasty little beverage.
Excellent.
I'm going to have a sip up right now.
Excellent, excellent. So, Sherwin, maybe should we tell everyone this is the first ever kind of thing we're doing here. You want to fill everyone in on that real quick?
Sure, sure. So the normal host of the PETM podcast, Rusty, was unavailable this week, sort of kind of suddenly. And matter of fact, he's landing in Vegas right about now, I think. And I was like, man, I've pushed Trevor around so much. I don't really want to do it again. And I had a wild hair strike me last yesterday afternoon. And asked Brandon, hey, would you like to participate in this? Because I know I'm going to be a terrible host because I'm normally like, so if you think about the play-by-play guy and the color commentator, I typically am the color commentator.
Absolutely. I like that description. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Which means it was going to be a struggle for me to be a host, which is why I've been nervous all week. But I think we've got a great lineup here in the show sheet to talk about. And so, Brandon, you and I are going to have to work off each other. We have the video.
It ain't the first time.
No, it's not. It's not. I, you know, for those out there in the nebulous, you know, Brandon and I have collaborated quite a bit on his show, and he's been on our show. I've been to Michigan to hang out with him at a racetrack. He's come down here to Atlanta to go with us to Darlington.
Oh,
he's going to come down again.
Yes, yes,
and go to Atlanta Motor Speedway with us. So, I mean, we, you know, this is definitely a collaborative effort in the grand scheme of things. So,
absolutely.
Trevor, why don't you introduce yourself off the top and just tell us who you are and what you're doing?
Yeah, I'm 17. I live in South Carolina, down near Savannah, between Savannah Hilton Head Island. I race late models for the NASCAR Wheel and All-American Series at Myrtle Beach Speedway. And I've raced for 12 years now, or 10 total years, but I started when I was 5 and I'm 17 now. So over 12 years, I took a 2-year break when I was 8 because my dad had work conflicts. But yeah, I've been racing since I can remember, and it's definitely what I love, and I can't wait to talk about it tonight.
That's awesome. So what discipline did you start in?
Oh, I've always done asphalt oval. I tried dirt once, and it was for just to get kids interested into racing and to see how much it would cost and stuff like that when I was 5. But yeah, I've watched dirt. I love dirt, but I've always been an asphalt oval guy. I have respect for every type of motorsports.
That's awesome.
Trevor, let me ask. So you mentioned at the start, you just got back from lacrosse practice. You said you're 17, so obviously still in high school, and you race. What's racing season like for you, and what's your school, social life, racing balance like?
It's a definite balance. For the most part, you know, we've kind of worked back towards one day shows where it's, you know, you've got practice, qualifying, race all in the same day. Last year we were in the Cars Tour, and that was it was kind of too much because I take AP level classes. So it's not really something that I can skip as frequently as much as I would love to. You know, if I can avoid that, I definitely do. So for the most part, I'll just drive up Saturday morning, and there's no real toll, I think, to my social life or high school. I'm president of 5 clubs. I participate in 12.
That's awesome, dude.
Yeah, I stayed busy, especially during the winter months. But it was hard. This November, we did 2 races that I had to leave on Thursday night, so I didn't get any homework done the whole weekend. Didn't get home till Sunday morning, so that was rough. But my teachers are always really helpful. They try and give me the work early and show me how to do stuff. So it works out pretty well.
Awesome. Well, we're going to get into more of that in the recess period of the report card. So why don't we go ahead and jump into, and this is very fitting because you're still in school and trying to sort it all out, what we call our report card, first period. This is a long read, so just bear with me.
No problem.
Trevor, you've recently been involved in a social media style way of obtaining sponsorship, using the hashtag sponsorme PFC19 campaign. I've seen some of that in the past from other companies. Do you think it's something that we'll see more of in the future? It seems like a viable way to try to pick up some sponsorship. Fans like to feel like they're part of something. Companies get an opportunity to see their name on stuff. Sounds like a win for everybody. Is there a downside to that style of sponsorship pitch?
And one thing for me is, you know, I've jumped on this opportunity the last 3 years since they started doing it. And one thing that for me personally, I don't have as much time, you know, go and try and chase every sponsor that I can, as much as I try to. And I don't necessarily have that family connection, you know, daddy's money, as everyone likes to say, and stuff like that. So for a guy like me who, you know, is just trying to make the most of this opportunity, this is like the perfect opportunity because it incorporates the fans, it incorporates, you know, your team and your crew and stuff like that. And it also lets you show creativity, but it doesn't rely on, you know, previous connections you have. It's just you and social media and what you can try to do. And you don't even have to have, you know, prior experience because, you know, there's a lot of us from what I saw that were just, you know, kind of feeling the water out at the beginning. And, you know, a lot of us progressed through this year especially. You've got guys like Rafi Slate and Trayton Lapovich that, you know, came up with really awesome graphic promotion for PFC. And it's great for the company as well because they get free advertisement before they even shell out a dollar sponsorship. So I don't see any downside, especially for a small guy like me that does everything pretty much by ourselves with our team. So I think it's personally great. I would love to see it expand, especially to suppliers.
Awesome. Brandon, you got anything to you want to ask there in regards to the online sponsorship deal?
You know, I guess I would just, you know, we're starting to see this at all levels. You know, we've seen guys like Matt DiBenedetto kind of take a plea to social media. You know, there's a lot of people on social media, you know, and like Sherwin, you got you and Rusty, the Patreon account, you know, I think you, the way you pitch the Patreon account is, hey, you know, maybe you want to help out a small team, but you know, you can't afford a whole lot. So what's your $20 going to do? The course of getting a collaborative group of people together, like you rattled off 20 plus names there. And with the, you know, you guys heading that. That $20 becomes a lot bigger than $20 and can go a long way. So I can definitely see a plus side to all of that.
And another thing on top of that is that, you know, sponsorship has kind of evolved. You know, like in the 80s, 70s, 80s, the biggest part of sponsorship was having, you know, the car on the track so that, you know, millions of people could see it. And now that a lot of racing has moved back towards grassroots, where you see a lot of smaller teams and a lot of teams doing different things that isn't necessarily the top three touring series, you've got a lot of opportunities to move that sponsorship package from just, you know, your billboard on the racetrack, which is, you know, what a lot of us like to say, to more active brand engagement, where you get, you know, fans to have not just exposure through seeing it, but exposure through talking about it, being able to discuss it and stuff like that.
You know, I think, you know, when I look back, you know, growing up in an age, and I, you know, Sherwin, I think you'll be able to relate to this too. You know, Sherwin and I grew up, we're in our mid 30s, so we grew up without social media, and we've seen it transition just do a complete 180. So when you look at the importance of social media and how that's evolved, just from a social aspect, let alone throw sports into that, you know, if we didn't have friends to talk about racing with growing up, you know, we were kind of left to talk to ourselves, where now we can turn to social media and get that engagement, which is really a cool thing. So I love that side of it all.
Yeah, and like I said, I would love to see it expand, because for me, it helps me to personally just to get the race car back on track. But, you know, last year we had the coffee company as our primary sponsor, but we had the largest section of our funding besides the our primary sponsor was fans. I mean, we did a program where for $1 you could get your car name on the race car. The idea was to do it per race, but I felt like if anyone was willing to help us out, I just kept them on the car for the whole year. Is how it worked out, and it worked out great for us. You know, we have so many great devoted fans that just want to get into grassroots racing and promote the sport, that any program like this, whether it's brakes, Mobile One, oil, if they were to try it, anything like that would be huge.
Yeah, I think it's – sorry, Brandon, I'm jumping in on you, but I think one of the things that we have tried most to do with the Patreon account with PETM is let people know that, you know, you don't have to be – you know, 4 or 5 or 6 digit contributor in order to help racing. And that's the whole point of the account, is we've said from the beginning that we're not, you know, this doesn't go to help pay for our internet service or, you know, any of the things that we do extraneous to racing. That everything that we collect from our listeners is going to go to an individual racer. And our hope is that at someday, you know, we'll have enough money that maybe we can, you know, sponsor 2 different racers or move up to a different series than Legends. But I mean, it felt great to do something with our local contingent here in Atlanta. That we know we have a summer series here. Legends is a path to NASCAR for a lot of guys. I mean, Joey Logano, Reed Sorensen, Chase Elliott, David Reagan, they have all raced in that series and then made it all the way to Cup. So it feels like, you know, sort of the right approach for us out of the box. And we hope to be able to do more going forward.
Yeah. And I raced with Jensen, I think it was 5 years ago when I still raced Bandoleros, and that's when he won his national championship. And one thing I can say about Jensen is he is the most respectful competitor I've ever raced against. Point blank period. He will, you know, he'll race you hard, but he'll race you clean, and he's not going to wreck you for a win. And that's something I really respected, and he was able to do it well. I mean, he won we went to three or four tracks that year, and he whooped everybody every week, just about. And when he finally won his national championship and stopped racing was when I was able to actually get my three wins that year. But yeah, I love Jensen, and when I saw that you guys were sponsoring him, I don't remember when it was last year, but I was so happy for him, because that's huge, especially the Legends Car Series, just to get any amount of funding, because, you know, for the companies that want that rolling billboard, there's not a lot of surface area on a Legends car to do that, because it's shaped really weird for that type of stuff. It's not like a late model where everything's flat and large for it. But like you said, it's a perfect way at a grassroots level, because I came from Legends Cars and Bandos and stuff like that. And, you know, that's supposed to be the best way to feed into the NASCAR ladder system. And, you know, you've got guys like Jensen that are doing it the right way. They're working hard. They're winning races. They're driving smart. And I'd hope to see him move forward in the future as well. And I know he has a couple pro truck and late model starts, I believe. And he's done really well. And I've got so much respect for him. And I have so much respect for any guy that is able to do – or any guy or girl that's able to do it themselves, work hard, and, you know, just get to the racetrack, which is what I'm trying to do this year.
Yeah, I think meeting his family just totally changed our world this past year, seeing how proud his dad was that – his efforts and his behavior as a human being and as an eraser had reached somebody that might be willing to do something for him. And we feel the same amount of pride from all the people that donate to the Patreon. Like I think it's the same. I mean, I'm obviously, we'll never feel the same pride that Jensen's dad or mom does, but it's real similar. And that makes it so much fun. It gives you that sort of heartfelt, like, you know, commitment to why you want to do the thing that you're doing.
Yeah. And, you know, racing is a very sometimes heartless sport where it'll chew you up and spit you out. But, you know, all of us are in it. We love it so much. We don't care. We'll keep coming back for more. And, you know, racing's put, you know, my family through a lot. And we keep coming back because we love it. But I know for a family team like that, I love the whole Jorgensen family. For any family that, you know, is able to see that, you know, we're putting this team on track each week, to have that validated by a sponsor coming on is huge. It's probably the best thing you can do for a grassroots racing team, in my personal opinion.
Cool. Well, we certainly appreciate I know Brandon does, and I do too, and Rusty certainly does. I appreciate your efforts, Trevor, to get attention by reaching out to us. I think that is important. I appreciate your acknowledgement that any kind of exposure is good exposure, especially when we're going to have good race talk. And on that note, we will skip on next to the next period, where I'm sure you saw this, but I knew there was a couple of guys out there that everybody knows who they are, that have a ton of respect for local racing and local and dealing with local tracks and local racers. And I was hoping that they would respond, and they did. And so thank you to them. Matthew Dillner, who, for those of you who don't know, is the producer of a lot of the podcasts that come out of Junior Motorsports, yep. Particularly the Door Bumper Clear podcast. And what he asks is, what kind of social media web content do you intend to do to build your brand / following?
You know, for me, it's like I said, I have to focus on school and racing and everything as well. But this year, I'm definitely hoping to, you know, try and give it back to the fans more and try and do more social media and online stuff. I have a website and I keep up with it sometimes, but I have so much going on most of the time that I just kind of put the bare minimum on and, you know, whatever I can do in the amount of time that I have, and then just send it so that people can see it. But this year I'm going to focus more on that, get out full race reports outlining our whole weekend, try and get some more pictures. It's hard for me to take pictures during the race weekend because I'm running around, you know, changing tires and driving the race car. So if I can get a photographer at the racetrack, that'd be awesome. But yeah, I'll definitely try and get more pictures as well on the race, on the website. But the biggest thing that I'm going to do this year, which is really exciting and really new, is I'm going to try a vlog. It will probably only be monthly, just to outline, you know, the struggles of a grassroots race team and everything that we have to do just to get one race car onto the racetrack for one race, and then, you know, see what happens before we go to the next one. And it kind of was inspired by that conversation a lot of us had on Twitter about 2 weeks ago. It was like, me, you guys, Matt Weaver, and stuff like that, just talking about the state of the sport and what we can do to improve grassroots racing. And I realize that there's a lot of people that don't know every part of, you know, what goes on at a small team like ours. So they just think, you know, it's just, you know, someone's paying money to get on the racetrack, and it's so much more than that. So, you know, just to raise awareness for what a lot of us guys are doing at the late model level, mini stock, street stock, legends, I think it'll create a greater respect for grassroots racing as well, and possibly promote it for the future.
Is there a way for you to stream? I know some of the smaller tracks don't necessarily like, you know, periscoping or, you know, doing Facebook Live and that sort of thing at the track because they want people to get there. But obviously not everyone can get to where you're at. Is there a way, or do you know if the tracks you go to allow you, you know, to maybe do some streaming of practice or whatever it may be?
That's definitely something I'm looking into for this year, because the NASCAR rulebook doesn't technically allow for GoPros in Division One race cars because it's considered telemetry. So it's something I can work around by talking to track management, because track management has the ultimate authority, which is definitely something I'm working on for this year, trying to get live stream practice, not necessarily a race, because that's a little bit more unpredictable. And I don't, you know, I want to make sure that, you know, everything that comes out of what we're doing is, you know, how we want to be portrayed.
Sure.
There's been certain situations where we've been, like, some people come attack me for, you know, my ethnicity and stuff like that. I don't want that to be broadcast live. So just to have a little bit more control of that aspect. But for practice and qualifying, it's definitely something I've been looking into. I've been working closely with management, just talking about, you know, different ideas to try and get more people in the seats, more people to watch the races. And that's just video in general, video content from the race weekend is what I'm looking into.
Awesome.
So two things there, Trevor. First, I want to ask you to tell the listeners about your ethnicity. What's your background? What makes you different?
I was born in Seoul, South Korea, and I was adopted here when I was 6 months old, and to two amazing parents. They're both Italian. But, you know, everyone just sees that, you know, I'm Asian. It's pretty obvious. But, yeah, there's been several instances where, you know, I've attacked because of something that happened on the racetrack. But, and, you know, everyone just kind of goes for the low-hanging fruit and attacks me on my ethnicity, which is – I don't – you know, there's a fine line between a racial joke and something that's, you know, hate speech and stuff like that. And there's been certain instances where people can't separate something that's on track from my ethnicity, and that I don't find that personally okay, but
well, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, and for me personally, it's, you know, when we strap into the race cars, everyone's the same size, everyone's exactly the same as far as I'm concerned. Doesn't matter how old you are, your race, your gender, whatever, we're all the same, we're all race car drivers, and we all have one goal, and that's to win. And luckily for the past year and a half, nothing really too bad has happened, because I've found Myrtle Beach Speedway and they have a really great program going on. Everyone down there is like family, and it's a really cool thing to see, especially for grassroots racing, and I absolutely love it there.
Well, from the billboard hat that you're wearing, I can tell you're as American as apple pie. So the other question I wanted to ask you is, can you tell the folks that are listening, what are the technical differences between what you race and not necessarily all the other things that people race, but you race a late model. How's that? What makes the car that you race the distinction of what it's called? Because in the South we have, and I've been cussed out repeatedly, as you've probably seen on Twitter, for confusing some of these series. What makes your car distinct?
Okay, so I race a late model stock car, which is prevalent in Virginia, Tennessee, North and South Carolina, and that's just about it. I think there's like five or six of them in Florida, maybe. For most of the rest of the country, it's just super late model, pro late model. And a super late model is a full custom-built chassis, usually, and they've got custom-built motors, and it's basically everything's maxed out. It's like a diet cup car for them. I mean, I say that, but I don't know that much about them. From my experience with them, they're just really fast, really light, and really loud. They're awesome to see, but they're a lot more expensive than what I run. A pro late model is, from what I've been told, a super late model chassis with a late model stock engine in it. So they run similar speeds to what we run. Like when they do Battle of the Beach, they run prolate model against late model stock and stuff like that. My car is a Crate 604 straight from GM and a generally standard two-frame chassis. I know there's a difference between perimeter and straight rail, and I want to look it up to make sure I don't say it wrong. I can't find it right now, but I know.
No, it's fine. You don't have to look it up. I've seen what straight rail is. Typically, that means that the frame, what we would consider the frame rails, are much closer to the drive shaft than a perimeter rail, which is more like a NASCAR stock car.
Yeah, and I don't know as much about the technical side, but I do know from, you know, my perspective as a driver, you've got a lot more late model stocks in, like I said, this southeast corridor that we've got, and you've got supers and pros pretty much everywhere else. But there are super teams in, you know, the Carolinas and Georgia as well. It's pretty much, and like I said, the biggest difference is that you've got late model stocks only in this corridor. And so you've got so many late model stock series down here. You've got the Cars Tour. You've got every individual. So NASCAR Wheel and All-American for us. There's a couple Outlaw series as well. But, you know, for Supers, there's the Southeast Supers, Southern Super Series, Pass, Cars. And I think there's like 11 that come within 500 miles of just where I live. So there's plenty of options for that, but there's so many different rule books just to run between tracks, not much less, you know, track that's 5 feet down the road between, you know, because for – I'm sorry, I'm getting a little mixed up in my words, but
– You're good.
You know, for my car, I can go just about anywhere in that corridor that I keep mentioning, and I'm able to race it with maybe change a couple pounds, but that's it. And different tire because of the tire contracts at each racetrack. Now, if I run a super, the difference is I'd have to change the car from teams that I've talked to, change the car to drive from this track to this track. And if I go across the country, it's a completely different rule book. So the standardized portion of what late model stock is, and that's what it was designed to be, has created a really diehard group of late model stock drivers. And, you know, you have super late models drivers that are really passionate about what they do. And they're able to, from what I've seen, kind of drive down costs a little bit because they're able to work on solutions independently, whereas everyone else has a standard set of things that they have to buy. So you've got, you know, suppliers that are able to kind of work together and strangle the market. And that's kind of my understanding of it from right now. I've done a good bit of research, but I've also, you know, raced late models for 4 years now. So this is just from personal experience and what I've seen and talked to drivers and stuff like that.
Okay. So there's a lot of different directions I could go here because I'd love to talk to you about this for forever and ever. But if if the standard ladder is Bandolero's Legends late model slash whatever K&N is going to become, and whatever, you know, and is ARCA and late model going to merge? That's kind of what it feels like. Like, if that's what we're doing, why do we have all these other little series that have just enough rules to make you guys spend more money?
I think a lot of it's because, you know, grassroots racing as a whole isn't always just to get to the next level. Because most of the guys that race Myrtle Beach Speedway are over 30. You know, you've got your Bandoleros, which are definitely for most of the time kids, Legends cars. And once you get to late models where you kind of see a difference between late model stock lifers or short track lifers and people that want to move up. And a lot of times you'll see the people that want to move up will usually run late model stock for a short period of time and then jump into supers. That's not something I was able to do financially. But, you know, Supers is the next step for a lot of kids to go up to your ARCAs, K&N trucks, stuff like that, to get to that big three touring series that's, for a lot of them, their goal. But, you know, this rule book is kind of – everyone's kind of staked out a claim in a different territory, whether it be a state, a track, a small area, region, whatever you want to call it. You see a lot of tracks or rule books that just stake one claim and stick to that and let everyone else figure it out for themselves. I think part of that's because we haven't agreed as an industry what we're trying to do. And, you know, you have some people saying that, you know, our goal is to feed kids in the ladder system. And, you know, for the people are saying, you know, we just want to entertain the local masses for to bring motorsports closer to them. And I don't say we think we have to agree on that necessarily, but there has to be some recognition that we only have so many cars now. It's not like, you know, 20 years ago where you had C mains at your local feature race. We're lucky to get full fields. Myrtle Beach Speedway is one of only three tracks in the Carolinas to get full fields regularly. And two of the other tracks aren't able to guarantee a full field. So once we fix that problem is when we can start getting into, you know, staking claims and territories and stuff like that. But we need definitely the standardized rule books, in my opinion, just from what I've seen for supers and even for late model stocks sometimes. Because, you know, if I go up to Orange County Speedway, the tire combination is different. The carburetor combination is different. My weight has to be completely different. So it's a lot of change for us to justify making $200, you know what I mean, just to travel 6 hours, change everything. So it's not worth it for us, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, understood. Those are all good things to know, because it is hard to tell if you're not engrossed in it, you know, if you're not entrenched in it the way Matt Weaver is. You know, he's got a wealth of knowledge in all that stuff, and yeah, and he calls me out when I make a mistake, and it's deservedly so, because I don't know, and I don't want to disseminate crappy information, because I you know, I want to support. That's what we're here to do.
Yeah.
So we sort of belabored that point for a while. So why don't we skip on to the next Dillner question? This is third period of the report card. Mr. Bob Dillner, purveyor of the Speed 51 outlet. Trevor, do you feel like you have to win to make the next step for you?
Well, you know, what my family has kind of done is we've raced, you know, just for fun. It's always been my goal, you know, part of me, to be a professional race car driver. The older I get, the less likely I think that is, just because I don't have the financial means to do that. Excuse me. But I think for me personally, just I don't feel I have to win, but I know to satisfy my needs as a race car driver, I want to win every race. But, you know, I don't think personally I'll have the skills necessary until I know I can close the deal and win one of, you know, a late model stock race. If I were to go to ARCA, Canaan, and anything else beyond this, I don't think I'd have the faith in myself to move on without having that win behind me. I don't necessarily feel like I have to, but I feel like it would definitely help.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt you've got the commitment to getting the exposure you need to potentially get the financial demands that are required by a team to make, you know, make some space, get some attention in the areas that you're racing in. That certainly, and I think that's the second time I've said it, but I appreciate it a lot that you're so aggressive, because it's awesome. Brandon, what do you got to say about that?
You know, I think it's awesome to watch people like, sure, when you had mentioned all the kind of like the corporate ladder of racing and climbing that. It's fun to watch people. It's fun to talk to people in this environment. Because you never know where they might end up down the road. You know, you mentioned needing potentially that win or wanting that win before moving on to the next series. You know, is the thought there to maybe entertain a one-off or a two-off in a different series, not making the full commitment to that series just to kind of test it out, to even make sure you like the feel and driving in that series in that car, you know, without maybe necessarily having that win?
I mean, for me, I don't, like I said, I don't have the financial means to continue racing beyond the late model stock level unless I get, you know, a large corporate sponsor, a team that believes in me. So for me, there's a couple guys that I've been talking to that, you know, if it came down to it and I was able to prove myself and find, you know, significant financial backing, I could potentially move up just to try, you know, one or two races, like you said. And that'd be something I'd definitely be open to. I just don't think for me I'd be able to make the next step in this ladder in good faith without having a win behind me to back up, you know, performance.
So, and we've said next about four or five different times between the three of us. If you know, if NASCAR and Next called you and said, are you interested? Is that something you would want to do?
Yes, that would most definitely be something. It's been something I've been, you know, working my tail off. And part of that is the Rev Racing Diversity Program. It's something that NASCAR sponsors, or they pay for. And they work with Max Siegel Incorporated, and they run, I think this year it's going to be 4 late model stock teams and 2 K&N teams. And it's for minorities and women to get into racing. And it's basically just a fully funded season in that car. And that's a program that I've been working my tail off to get to. And we were pretty close this year. It just didn't work out. So we'll see next year. But, you know, if something like that came along, that'd be something I'd definitely be open to in a heartbeat without even thinking about it.
So just to be super direct, is it a challenge for you to get involved with diversity programs because you have 2 white adopted parents? Does that create any extra challenges for you?
I don't have access to those panels and stuff like that. I don't want to speculate, like I said, but I think for me, it's just, you know, because of where we've been financially, it's hard for me to put up consistent numbers because we'll have some months where, you know, the budget will be great, and we'll have some months where everything's really tight. And you can kind of see that in our performance. And last year we had great run after great run, but it was just stopped by some random mechanical failure every single time, it seemed like. And it wasn't like my team was doing a bad job, because they go over the car thoroughly every week. It was just, you know, welds that we checked that cracked from the manufacturer. We lost a track bar mount one race when we were running 5th. Our 101 lap race in the middle of the year, our engine started blowing up halfway through, lost power steering. Engine started overheating halfway through as well. So that was a hard race for me, because we were doing so well. We were running 5th. And we only end up with 1 top 5 this year. And we were in position to finish 5th or better probably 6 or 7 times and be ended by mechanical failures. And that was really hard for all of us, because, you know, to get these opportunities, you need to have performance to back it up. And we know we can have that performance. It's just we're not able to show it on paper.
Sure. All right. Obviously, that is a very passionate topic for you. We're going to skip to recess, so maybe we'll have a little fun here. You mentioned in our process of trying to book this show that you had some after-school activities, some sports and some other things you may be involved with. Tell us about what those are and how you think they help you become a better race car driver, if you think they might.
For me, you know, I've been blessed with, you know, the ability to get good grades and stuff like that. So, you know, my backup plan has always been, you know, college and stuff like that. And, you know, hopefully getting a great school. I applied to Georgia Tech as well. I know, y'all.
Yes. Go Jackets.
hopefully waiting for an acceptance letter from there.
But, you know, we will meet you in Atlanta if you do.
Yes, sir. But yeah, I do a lot of stuff. I started lacrosse this year, and 2 reasons. I really like the sport. It just seems like an interesting sport. But the physicality and the mental game of lacrosse is very similar to the thought process under fire that you have to do in racing. And I didn't notice this until I started playing. But, you know, there's so many decisions that you have to make, you know, under fire. And, you know, in a race car, under fire, you know, you're hot, you're trying to go faster. But in lacrosse, you know, if you make a mistake, you get hit. So there's 2 different types of incentives.
Yep.
But in practice, I started realizing, like, this is a lot like racing. So that's when I really started trying to elevate my performance at that, because I knew the better I got at this, and if I get in better shape as well, it's going to make me better on the racetrack. So that's the only real connection I think I have between my after-school activities and what I'm doing on the racetrack. But otherwise, I run our school's model UN program, our student council, our robotics team, and I also participate in Science Olympiad, National Honor Society, National Spanish Honor Society, National Science Honor Society, School Improvement Council, DECA, and there's a couple others, but I can't remember them right now. So I'm pretty busy most of the time.
So let me ask you this right off the bat. what's your GPA?
I have a 5.035 South Carolina weighted GPA.
And what's your SAT score in the book?
Ended up with a 1400. I only took the SAT for scholarships. It wasn't really something that I studied for real hard. I got a 33 on the ACT, which is the score that I really wanted to submit to colleges.
Okay. So I'm going to be buying you lunch in Midtown Atlanta probably about this time next year when you've just finished your first semester at Georgia Tech, if not sooner. I promise you, you're getting in. If I need to call somebody, I will.
So I just want to chime in as someone that has been in college for what seems like forever through a couple advanced degrees and working on a PhD. You are on the right track from that regard in terms of the education that you're doing in high school, the sports that you're doing, the other activities, the student council, all that. Man, just the way at 17 to hold yourself talking to two 35-year-olds talking NASCAR and sports, you have great composure and you carry yourself incredibly well. So from that regard, I just want to commend you. I can tell you're proud of yourself. You should be proud of yourself, and I think that's fantastic.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
We need to get you connected with Amber Fleeman. She just graduated, and she races Legends cars down at Atlanta, and she was all everything at Georgia Tech. She was a student body rep. She was president of her Phi Mu sorority. She's a rock star. She might be a great asset for you.
All right. I appreciate it.
Hey, Sherwin, I got to hijack recess for a minute just because it is recess.
Okay.
So I'm going to go off
recess.
A complete left tangent here since it is recess. We're talking sports. Huge shout out to my Michigan Wolverines, 17-0. Duke losing last night. I expect to see the Maize and Blue number one on the rankings next week.
They might be. They might be because – so here's some funny thing. I have connection to this comment, this vein of yours that you wanted to express because Georgia Tech went to Syracuse on Saturday and beat the Orange in the Carrier Dome, and Syracuse beat Duke in Cameron Indoor last night. So
it's just
I don't know
a perfect
what that
circle.
Sports math is, but I'm feeling pretty excited about the Yellow Jackets.
I'm excited about college basketball, and I'm going to keep the hijack going. Break the fourth wall again. Sherwin, I think you can see the hoodie there. Go Pats.
I can see it.
P-A-T-S. Yeah. Pats, Pats,
go,
Pats.
Hey, go Chiefs.
All right. Hijack is over. I had to get that in there.
All right. Are we done? Is touch football on the playground over? Is somebody got their jeans all muddied up they didn't intend to? All right. I'm assuming so.
Yes.
It's all good. Enjoy it. Fourth period from our friend Frank Vallat in North Carolina, who is a NASCAR journalist in some of his free time, I believe. He can... tell me wrong. I don't know if he gets paid or not, to be honest with you. He's a great dude. He's been a part of our show for a couple years. Wants to ask if either us or Lap Traffic were a viable sponsor, what would your pitch be, Trevor?
Oh, golly. Oh, put me on the spot right there.
30-second really? Elevator pitch.
Really, for our team, if anyone was interested in joining, you know, we're a small team, family-run team that we work closely with AK Performance, who is also a family team. And for the past 5 years, we've become so close that we're definitely like a family as well as a team. And we're really just a small group of guys that's doing our best to get a race car on track. And through the past couple years, just trial and error, we've been able to elevate our performance from a team that was able to run 30th, qualify 30th at the same race, the Myrtle Beach 250 2 years ago, to this year we qualified 19th, had some bad luck, went to last and ended up 10th just by driving through the field. And we went to the Myrtle Beach 400 the next week and, you know, led first practice, was someone to beat all weekend, had more bad luck in qualifying, unfortunately, went race through the pack and got wrecked racing for 10th. This is just, we take pride in our successes and we take our losses to try and learn from them. So there's, you know, we do our best and we'll definitely do the best to represent you.
I love it. You know, one thing, just kind of as you did that there and mentioned some of the things that you're a part of. And this is literally just shooting out the hip here. Have you maybe thought about reaching out to some of the, you know, National Honor Society, some of the national school programs that are a part of high school that you may be a part of, or that may be a part of college, that might be a different approach as being someone that's as well-rounded as you on the racetrack in terms of seeing if some of those programs might be interested in reaching out and sponsoring and working with you from a race perspective?
I definitely I've looked into the education sector a little bit, not to that degree, and that's something interesting that I'll definitely have to start on tonight. So I appreciate that. Mostly we've been focusing on local companies in Bluffton, where I live, as well as Myrtle Beach, where I race, and you know, trying to give it back to the fans. So everything we can do, we want a company that, you know, fans can get behind. That, you know, luckily with 3030 Coffee Company, they gave us samples that we were able to distribute to fans, and they gave us cards to give out to fans and stuff like that. So, you know, my goal is, of course, to get the race car on the racetrack, but I also want it to be an enjoyable experience for my crew, myself, and anyone that, you know, appreciates racing and follows us.
I love that. That's awesome. Sherwin?
Yeah, so the thing I got my brain is running like 900 miles an hour because we've had some interaction with some folks at Georgia Tech, and I know I'm being biased here by trying to influence you wanting to go there, but as far back as 18 to 24 months ago, there was in process a scholarship fund being donated by Raymond Parks' wife in commemoration of his death. So have you been to the campus yet?
Not yet. I toured a couple colleges over the summer, and none of them I got into. So I've kind of decided to wait until I get in before I go and tour some more.
Okay. Well, so Raymond Parks was one of the original guys from Dawsonville, Georgia, that like basically helped create NASCAR. He was one of the first owners, I think even in 48 before they actually had finalized the deal. He was at the Skyline Hotel when they wrote the charter for NASCAR, and he's from Dawsonville, Georgia, but did most of his business in Atlanta as an adult. And his wife was looking to create a scholarship for somebody who wanted to go to Georgia Tech and get involved with racing, whether as a driver or as an engineer, crew chief, you name it, whatever it is. So I will make an admission of mine to help you try to connect to those people after we finish this conversation. I don't know exactly how to do it, but that is a commitment I will make to you.
All right. I certainly appreciate that.
You sound like the right kind of person both to be a Yellow Jacket and a racer. So, and I'd love for, you know, I'd love for Georgia Tech to be known as a place where racers come from, because they've done some great racing. They won Formula SAE when I was an undergrad in Australia, which is a really cool program that I worked right alongside. That was an open wheel, you know, basically like an Indy car, essentially. And right next door, I was, you know, cutting and grinding metal parts for GT Off-Road. So I was right there in it. So my heart and soul is in it. And let's move on to fifth period.
I love it.
Okay. Because we still have some listener questions to get through. Fifth period. All right. So this one's kind of silly. It's like you finish out your Friday and you're like, all right, you got one more question. What's it going to be? It's going to be dumb. Grade the silly season. I think a lot of us have thought this silly season might be the wildest that we've seen in a while.
So I'm going to jump in here. I am giving the silly season a C-. All right. And for me, the silly season was kind of anticlimactic because it was stretched out so long. Like it, we didn't get like that one day of like big announcements, kind of like draft day or national signing day. Like it was spaced out and everything was like, duh. Like we knew that was coming. Like it was so predictable, I think, a lot of it in terms of, I think the biggest moments of the silly season wasn't necessarily the driver changes, but like, you know, Furniture Row closing down. That was a big moment. Once some things started to play out, I think things seemed obvious. It just took a really long time for the final and official announcement to come out. Like, you know, Suarez and Kurt Busch, those things just kind of seemed really predictable along the way. So from that regard, there were a lot of changes, but it wasn't all that exciting. So I'm going C minus.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you a little. I'm not too much, but I'm going to give it a B because for me, something that hit close to home was Austin Hill, who's been driver coach of me since I raced Bandoleros. Just it was announced pretty recently that he got a ride with Hattori Racing, and that was something that I've known about for a little bit. And you know, it's a huge opportunity for him. He works his absolute tail off week in and week out, to, you know, to try and elevate the performance of whatever he's racing. But like you were saying, it seems like the silly season, like in years past, it was just 2-3 days of just, you know, announcements from teams. But this year, it seemed to start like in November, and there'd be like small news here, one guy there, and then like this past week, there were 4 different announcements about, you know, teams in the Xfinity and Truck Series. Last week, there was a team that shut down in Xfinity Series and stuff like that. But you know, the reason I'm giving it a little bit higher grade is because there's been a lot of series shattering news this year. You have the two Cup Light Xfinity teams that shut down this year.
Sure.
And my heart breaks for Ross Chastain for that, because, you know, he's another guy that's worked, you know, super hard for that opportunity to have it ripped away from him like that. But you've got a lot of big changes happening. You know, you've got Truex to Gibbs, and you've got I think Kurt Busch went to – I can't remember it right now.
Chip Ganassi.
Yeah, he went to Ganassi. So there's a lot of – you're going to see a lot of different performance from a lot of different cars. I think you're going to see actually more cars in that front pack for next year. So there's a lot of news that came out really slowly at first, but it's going to change how we see NASCAR next year, I think.
Sure.
Great comments from both of you. I'm not sure where to go with this myself. I want to almost give it an incomplete, because I, you know, like we're in a college class where you didn't show up for enough days or you dropped it past the drop date. I don't believe that Ganassi will not be fielding an Xfinity car next year. I'm not saying they're showing up at Daytona with a sponsor and a driver. I just think within about 6 or 10 races, they're going to realize they need to have it. You know, they're going to have it as a part of their program in order to develop crew members and develop crew chiefs and things like that. I think it's horrific that Daniel Suarez found out last week that he officially has a ride. I think that's very silly. I think it sucks that a championship winning cup team can't find sponsorship enough to not dig into the owner's pockets too deep to be able to run, especially after that incredible performance they put on for 3 years, including a championship and what amounted to 13 wins in 3 seasons. That's pretty impressive. And the fact that they can't get sponsorship speaks to the financial obstacles that NASCAR needs to sort out. I'm just going to give it an incomplete. I don't think we're done talking about it, too, to be honest with you.
Nope.
I think there's going to be some more things that happen before Daytona. There may be more things that happen before we get to the next Daytona.
I'm with you.
I definitely think, I mean, obviously with the radical changes that happen, you're going to see a lot of changes, but I think I agree with you. There's going to be a lot of stuff that's still changing because everything in the sport is so fluid. But one thing I wanted to point out was what you said about Furniture Racing.
Yeah, Furniture Row.
You know, where they kind of had to overspend what they could take in from sponsorship because to stay at that level of performance. And I think really that kind of points out the state of our sport right now. Because if you look at like the late model ranks, you've got a lot of really big teams that, you know, operate off high budgets per race. But that comes from usually the driver. It's not, you know, the team's responsibility to find sponsorship. They operate with the driver without. You know, you either come on with the sponsor or you're not racing pretty much. And it's kind of become like basically contracted racing, where if you have a sponsor, you're going to get to drive that race car. Luckily, I was able to fortunate enough to find, you know, AK Performance. So, you know, it didn't work out that way. It's kind of a team effort together with each other. But, you know, you see a lot of teams where drivers come and go. And it's something that I kind of noticed with Furniture Racing, where, you know, if you want that higher performance, you're going to have to outspend what the person is going to give you. And that's something we see a lot in late model stock, where, you know, most purses are anywhere between $4,000 and $6,000 to win. And every team that I talked to before I found out that AK Performance wanted to go into late models with me, they told me $8,500 to $12,000 per race, not including tires, not including crew or hard cards and stuff like that. So, you know, if you we're in a position as a sport that we have to outspend our means just to make, not even break even, to lose money no matter what we do. I think that points to a flaw in the system, especially at when this amount, degree of overspending that I know about is at the grassroots level. And these are decisions that kids are making at 13, 14 years old. And, you know, it obviously has to trickle upwards towards Cup.
You know, that's awesome that you pointed that out. I know it's stuff that I've talked about on my show. I know Sherwood and Rusty have talked about it on theirs. You know, it's not a cheap sport. I know up here in Michigan, everyone talks about hockey being an incredibly expensive sport, but racing far surpasses that. You know, and if you look over the years, recently, over the last couple of years, in terms of the amount of teams that have had to close their door across all three series, there's no incentive for a new owner to come into the sport unless they're just a diehard fan of the sport. You know, you look at stick and ball sports, you know, your 0-16 Cleveland Browns, the owner still made money on that. So it was still maybe not as much as other teams, but he wasn't in the red that year. And that, like you said, you know, it calls out a flaw in the sport. If to be an owner, you've got to be signing checks. I couldn't agree with you more.
And I mean, one thing you have to look at is in the Cup Series, you know, we lost Furniture Row Racing. They went from two teams to one team and then to zero teams. You know, look who's growing. You know, your small family run teams and stuff like that are growing. You've got the Matt DiBenedetto's car, Go Fast Racing. They're expanding that team. You know, you've seen their performance just kind of steadily ramp up, because they're not outspending what the purse is going to pay them, and they're realistic about their expectations. And you've seen, you know, Front Row Motorsports. They went from, I believe, two teams 3 years ago to now they're four this year. I might be wrong about that.
No, you're right. They were 2.5 for a couple years, and they went back to two, and now, yeah, they're definitely up to three full times next year.
Yeah, and it's you know, with this sport, if you can try and manage your expectations at that level where there is money all the way through the field, and you can kind of balance what you're making versus what you're spending, that's fine. But, you know, when you see that all these teams that are chasing the higher performance, they're, you know, in the boxes, a lot of TV guys say, you know, they're in that box of teams in the top three, four, where they're going to get talked about all race. If to get to that spot, you have to spend, you know, not only all your sponsorship dollars, you have to, you know, dig into your own pockets. That's a definite flaw in the sport, and it's something that, you know, I'll talk about all day if you want. It's something we've talked about online on Twitter and stuff like that.
Sure. I think, and I agree with whoever I last heard, I think it was Nate Ryan, talk about that one of the weird things about NASCAR is that we expect the sponsor to pay the driver's salary as opposed to him being a contracted employee. Despite what we hear about contracts, that's usually dependent upon the sponsor, which is weird, because just because SunTrust sponsors the Atlanta Braves Stadium doesn't mean SunTrust is responsible for the Atlanta Braves salaries. So that's something that NASCAR needs to reconcile for sure. And I don't know what I would have said next, but because I ran out of information in my brain. But I mean, I agree with a lot of what you said, Trevor. I agree with everything you said. I think one of the things NASCAR and all of stock car racing needs to figure out how to do is, you know, teams that want to come and show up every week, they got to at least break even for being there, because it's about entertainment. Like, you're racing because you're competitive and you want to be a sporting athlete who races cars. But the only reason why the sport even exists is because people like me want to come sit in the stands and watch it.
And exactly. I think one thing that what I've seen from NASCAR is they're not noticing the fact that it's the 21st century. There's so much, like, I mean, for me as a teenager, there's so much other stuff that I could do. Like, if I didn't love NASCAR as much as I did, there's, you know, I could spend all of my day online if I wanted to, really. But there's an infinite plethora of possibilities there. But there's so many other entertainment sources. And it's hard to hold a captive audience that's, you know, as brand loyal as NASCAR fans is. And I think what they're not realizing is, especially from, you know, a Wheel and All America Series standpoint, I feel like for a lot of us, they don't put in a lot of resources back. They don't flow a lot of their resources back into the Wheel and All America Series. So, like, we have the series and, you know, we have track championships and I got a certificate and for finishing top 500 points. And I got a small scholarship from University of Northern Ohio for finishing highest as a person under 18 years old in points for my track and stuff like that. But I think there's so much, because like when we hear about the Winston days, or when Winston sponsored grassroots racing as well as the Cup Series, there's, you know, there's so much going back into so many resources promoting short track events and getting people there, because they realized that that was the foundation of making fans for life in the big series. Because if you get that captive audience at a local level that they can interact with the stars of their town and stuff like that, they're going to feel like they can talk to them or that they want to watch those people at the big three series.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's move on to the fan questions, because we're already probably running a little long, which is fine. That tends to be the PETM standard, is to run a little long. I think folks are getting used to the fact that 60 minutes is not really our cap anymore, but we try. So from Andrew Kantsian, a strong supporter of the podcast, both ours and Brandon's, as a young racer, how do you think we can get a younger audience to support NASCAR and stock car racing at any level? So however you want to answer, that's fine.
Well, one thing that I liked is, like, I went to Homestead, it was 2 years ago, or maybe it might have been three. It was Jeff Gordon's final retirement race. I went down there, and Ford had this awesome setup. Basically, through the whole concourse, there was, like, games and giveaways and stuff like that. It was a huge level of fan interaction because they had a captive audience. So they were taking advantage of that to the fullest, where they were, you know, talking to fans, promoting, you know, Ford Motorsports and stuff like that. But one thing they had that I saw a lot of kids gravitate to was basically just a small iRacing simulator. And I have one at my house, and I use it as a training tool. But, you know, that's a great way to make a kid feel like, you know, they're in control and this is something that they could do. I know for a lot of people that I race on iRacing, they just like racing. And this is a way for them to experience that in a different way than they ever could just by watching it. So, you know, if you have game and you've got NASCAR heat and stuff like that, but, you know, 21st century solutions to 21st century problems is what I'm trying to get at, where, you know, you taking full advantage of social media. The Cup Series is starting to finally do this now, where they're live tweeting the races and stuff like that and getting, you know, younger drivers to take over their channels and stuff. But we need more of that at the local series. I don't know how they would accomplish that necessarily, but, you know, getting your local stars like Josh Berry, Lee Pulliam, and stuff like that to, you know, try.
Pollard.
Yeah, Bubba Pollard would be huge, because he already has such – I mean, I'm – like, I love Bubba Pollard because he is the epitome of what a short track racer should be. But
he's, you know, just a big old country boy that can race the hell out of a race car.
Exactly. you know, he knows what he's doing behind a car, and, you know, he does pretty well in the social media aspect, and we need more drivers like that. I think because, like, obviously a lot of these drivers are busy, but there's a lot of drivers that do social media well, and there's a lot of drivers that don't touch it, and there's not, too much in between. And even if we move the drivers that don't touch it to the in between to promote the sport, then that's going to be huge, because, you know, my goal last year was to promote not only myself but my race team and my speedway, because if we're not all helping each other out, then the whole sport's going to crumble. because grassroots racing is the foundation for IndyCar, kart, you know, everything you have in NASCAR top three and stuff like that. So if I'm not trying to get people in the stands or get people to watch what we've got going on, then no one's going to be interested in racing. And, you know, the idea of a driver promoting a racetrack, and, you know, they do the same for me, shouldn't be novel. It should be pretty much standardized throughout the industry. And yet you still have tracks that don't have Facebooks, don't have YouTubes, don't have Twitters and stuff like that. They're not engaging with their fans. And that's the biggest 21st century solution that you can come up to with any problem right now.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Any of them that are not participating in the social media space, boy, they're missing out, because, I mean, that is the space that we are using to promote what we're doing. I mean, without this space, we wouldn't have what we're doing. And if tracks and racers didn't give us this access, we wouldn't have it. So, I mean, thanks to you, and thanks to, you know, Pocono and Chicagoland and Talladega and Atlanta Motor Speedway and Bristol and all, we've met all kinds of people, and it's all been because of Twitter.
Yeah, so, you kind of ramp up that access at the short track level, you're going to see more people, you know, gravitate towards that and NASCAR as a whole, because, you know, you might say, you know, you've got NASCAR home tracks as one separate industry, and you got the top three series in one separate industry, but, you know, you're crazy if you don't think that that traffic flows together, because, you know, like I said, you put a toddler in front of a race car, it's like magic. I've seen, you know, little kids brought to the racetrack, they love, because it's loud and it's cool, but, you know, you can't get everyone in front of Joey Logano's car. It's just physically, you know, legit. You've been to cup races, it's logistically not possible, but to bring that access to local tracks, like we're trying to do through the Wheel and All American Series, just to expand that is probably one of my biggest hopes for Wheel and All American Series in general.
All right, we got to zoom through what's left. Mick Rose, who is our friend from the Midwest, who is a Chili Bowl enthusiast.
He's diehard.
Oh, I mean, he's all in. He's already there. He was at the track tonight. So, Trevor, in your most simplest explanation, have you ever thought about getting in a midget or a sprint car?
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's one of my goals, is to race the Trenton or Atlantic City indoor race and race a dirt midget anywhere. Doesn't matter where. I don't have any specifics like the indoor midget that I do for Atlantic City and Trenton. But I do want to race a midget or a sprint car at some point. So if anyone knows anyone that can get me in that seat, that'd be awesome. But it's definitely one of my life goals as a race car driver.
Want to do an entire lap turning to the right? Turn right to go left.
Exactly. That's, you know, just that exposure is awesome for me as a driver, just because it'll help me understand motorsports as a whole better.
Okay. And from Eddie Greer, at EG Fast Eddie, who has his own podcast, what are some of your favorite short tracks that you have raced, and what's one that you really want to go to?
The one that I really want to go to is Bristol. You know, I was supposed to go 2 years ago, and I couldn't come up with the money last year for the late model stock race, and right before, I just couldn't come up with the money to go, which is pretty disheartening to me. But for me, the tracks that I've gone to, I love Hickory, Orange County, and Myrtle Beach, because they're two multi-groove racetracks. And for me, I'm able to make the outside work a lot better than a lot of other drivers. And just the ability to try and, you know, choose where I'm driving and find grip and not be limited to just one spot on the racetrack and, you know, basically play follow the leader in all races, what I like. And just being able to get racy with guys and make different moves that most people wouldn't think of.
That's awesome. Obviously, people being able to make the high groove work is extremely exciting. We've seen that at all levels of racing. Because I think we're going to run out of time here for Brandon. I'm going to zip through a couple of things here. New followers, shout out Scott Boys at WABIGAMA. Loves NASCAR, the University of Michigan, which I know Brandon will love.
Hell yeah.
Wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
And Star Wars. This guy's your new best friend.
Man.
And then we got Deanna Hill, who is a NASCAR and dirt racing fan. And then Trevor, go ahead and shout out what your social media stuff is. However many you want to list is fine.
Oh yeah, pretty much. Right now, I only use Twitter for racing stuff, and it's @_TrevorRizzo8, I think. Let me check. Yeah, no, @_TrevorRizzo, capital T, capital R, and that's pretty much where you can find everything that I do. If you want to get a little more in depth with my bio and results and stuff like that, you can just check out RizzoRacing.com. And like I said, in the future, I'm hopefully starting a YouTube channel, but you'll be able to see all that on my Twitter. And that's the best way to access me. I'm, you know, always available for DMs or emails and stuff like that. My email's on there as well.
Awesome. Definitely start that YouTube channel. It's a lot of fun. Brandon, your social media?
Oh, the Professor Brandon Crowd at Lap Traffic PC. Next week, I am back after the winter hiatus. I'll be back next week with the Lap Traffic 2019 fantasy rules and all that. And then planning on picking it back up after that with the weekly Tuesday show. Got some surprises in store to kick off the season, which I am really excited about. So make sure you're checking out at Lap Traffic PC, the laptrafficpodcast.com. I'm sure you all know it by now. Sherwin?
Yeah. So obviously we're PETM podcast. That's on the Twitter and on the Instagram. And that is also the base of our email. And the base of our website and the base of our Patreon account. I am Andrew Sherwin, at Pregame Engineer, at Andrew L. Sherwin on Instagram. Rusty will be back next week. Tentatively planned for Georgia Henneberry when she gets back from Chili Bowl for PTM 179, but not totally confirmed yet, so I probably shouldn't have said that, but that's okay.
Sherwin, what do you say we let Sydney send us out on this one here?
That sounds like a good idea.
Excellent. All right. I'm out of here.
Thank you, Trevor.
See ya.
All right. Thank you, guys.